T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Thank you, Panthers. Thank you, Panthers. What a bunch of idiots over there. What are they, about 3 hours away? What the hell's in the water over there? Hopefully it doesn't seep into the water here in Atlanta. Bunch of idiotic morons in Carolina giving Kelvin Benjamin to the Bills for a 3rd and 7th round pick next year. Hey, we're going to chop it all up, man. We're going to react to Halloween. Hopefully only some of you are hungover this morning. Hopefully a lot of you were responsible like me and got to bed as soon as the World Series game came to a close. John, I was asleep by about 12:15 last night. It was gorgeous.
Yeah, the World Series ended, what, about 11:35, 11:40? Mm-hmm. I was asleep at about 11:42.
Just so, like me.
As soon as the wife was already out, she was like, she can't watch baseball.
Of course not.
And I was like, there's 2 more games, babe. I have to watch them. Like, they're important. So we were already both tired from walking around with the kids for almost 2 hours of trick-or-treating, which our neighborhood, we'll have some words for our neighborhood coming up here in about 39 minutes from now.
Do the words "put them on blast" apply here?
Some of them, yes. I did scare a few kids. I did not carry the machete. I actually just didn't feel like stopping at Party City.
No bloody machete?
No bloody machete. But one of our buddies, Sam, had to come by. Our heater was acting crazy downstairs and started to get cold. So he came by to do a little heat and air repair for us. And he had a jumpsuit on. I said, "Dog, I needed one of those jumpsuits." He goes, "I just happen to have one in the back of my truck that'll fit you." So he gives me one of the big blue jumpsuits.
Are
I threw
serious?
It in the washing machine, cleaned it up, and I ended up wearing that last night. A lot of the older kids, and I'm talking like 12, 13, they were like, "That costume's awesome." The younger kids were a little petrified every time I'd walk by them.
That mask is scary as heck, with the Michael Myers mask from the Halloween movies.
No, and John, he didn't have the mask on.
Really?
In
early
shot.
Starting the show?
An early shot from the Preacher Man.
That's all right.
So, crazy stuff last night with Halloween, the World Series, these trades in the NFL, college football playoff poll is out, UGA on top. I mean, where the hell do you want to start, man? I'm bursting with sports knowledge.
There's
here.
So many things to talk about. We love this time of the year. Because then when we get to, like, I don't know, mid-July and the trading day or the free agency's done in the NBA, you're still like a month out from the NFL season, we're going, all right, you want to dust off that old topic that we've been holding on to since March?
Top 5 Tuesday,
yeah,
if we remember it.
Or Wacky Wednesday or Throwback Thursday or whatever it may be.
Hey, you got to make it happen, man.
Real quick, before we get to ammo, how's the diet going? The wheatgrass and the nuts and all that
all
stuff.
Right. So I wanted some Moe's after the show yesterday. Couldn't go to Moe's and hear him say, "Welcome to Moe's," because I love that. Makes me happy because I know
what's
I'm about
you to. You could have got like the lettuce and meat.
I think I may go for a Moe's taco salad today. I don't know. I'm deliberating. But I had a, and by the way, I can't eat like salami, ham, roast beef, any of that stuff because it's processed and whatever. Mm-hmm. So I got to eat this turkey concoction that she had. So it was turkey, spinach, on wheat bread with a little bit of mayo. That was my lunch yesterday. I know, not very exciting.
Well, minus the mayonnaise, that doesn't sound half bad.
I mean, it was aight. I had to do what I had to do. By the way, my wife right now, the beautiful Charity, is being tortured at jury duty. Absolutely tortured.
Day two. Oh.
And she's going to try to play the hardship card today. She actually does have a doctor's appointment next week, and they're thinking about, like, some guy. Should I even say this over the air? It's not a name, right?
It's not your jury case.
Like,
I think you're all right.
Some guy's about to go to trial for like an armed burglary of a gas station or a liquor store. He like pistol whipped some dude.
Oh, wow.
And you know, robbed the store, and they're trying to get him off, of course. And you know, this scumbag needs to go to jail, but now they're torturing my wife over it.
Am I wrong that I want to serve on the jury like just once for that?
You're wrong.
Okay, is it that bad?
She described it as sheer torture.
Okay.
Like, the only thing that could have been worse is if actually her flesh was impacted by it.
Look, the one that I actually had to go sit in jury duty to see whether or not I was going to be picked for jury duty was excruciating, and it took all day, so I don't recommend it.
Okay.
It's not like the movies. You're not going to get – there's a very small percentage you're going to get the murder trial.
For the crime
and
of the
big,
century. Right?
Fancy courtroom. With, uh-huh. No, and half the crowd standing up saying, "No, that's not fair." And order in the court. No, you've seen way too – you sit in an office building for about 6 hours, hoping your name gets called, just playing on your phone. And, of course, they won't change the channel or anything good, so you have to watch, like, Kathy Lee and Hoda the whole time, drink some stale coffee, and try to make uncomfortable, awkward chit-chat with the person next to you who also doesn't want to be picked.
Okay, never mind. I'm out. Preacher man, let's get this thing fired up.
That's what's up.
This is the 5 at 10, the five biggest stories making headlines with Rick Kemla and John Michaels.
5 at 10.
The 5 at 10 on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
It's an exciting one for us because, man, it's been a long time to wait to get to the division. We've said it all along. That's where our focus lies. That hasn't changed, and it'll be a really physical game against a good division team.
It absolutely will be. First division game for the Falcons on the road, 1 o'clock. You'll hear it right here on Sports Radio 92.9. The game against the Carolina Panthers. Panthers are in the news, and we'll get to what they did. But this is a familiarity game where you actually know what to expect. Carolina's not going to come out and trick you. They're going to try to come out and out-execute you. They're going to run the football. They're going to be plotting on offense. They're going to try to beat you up defensively. They're going to try to make you play a 17-10 game and make you uncomfortable. If you can get them into our game, an up-tempo game, and you put 48 on them here a year ago, 33 at their place a season ago, you do that, Carolina can't win that football game.
John, you're right with all that. The one thing that is now a variable that takes us down some uncharted territory is this Kelvin Benjamin trade. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about that in a minute, but let's focus on what's on the field for Carolina right now. Devin Funchess is their number one wide receiver.
Big guy.
Devin Funchess is maybe a solid number two at best. And now he's a number one? Okay, so that's a joke. You've got Russell Shepard, about a fifth or sixth year guy out of LSU, about 6'1", 195. Really has not done a single thing in the National Football League. And you have the rookie out of Ohio State, Curtis Samuel. So in that way, John, you are going, and by the way, no Greg Olsen, so you are going to be playing a much different passing game for Carolina. I'm not saying that we can't defend these guys, but that's going to be something for Dan Quinn and his guys to sort of theorize about because they haven't seen that play out yet.
Well, and the Falcons did make a move yesterday that's going to help out a unit that's been struggling, quite frankly, in special teams. Leroy Reynolds back to the active roster. Jordan Tripp with a concussion now going to injured reserve. Remember, Reynolds is a guy that had a chest injury. He's also a player that can slide in and play some linebacker. We saw it a year ago with injuries. He did a pretty good job. He's a fast guy who can run. He's got a little bit of an attitude. So you like the fact that you see Leroy Reynolds coming back in a time that, quite frankly, you're going to need him down the stretch.
It's great news, dude. Shout out to Josh Pastner, the head coach of Georgia Tech. He was here for a gig with the morning show. Actually, you know, came up the escalators with him and walked up with him. He is such a cool guy. I cannot emphasize that enough. He is reason enough alone to cheer for Georgia Tech. And, John, that brings me to this. Number two in our 5 at 10, UGA, ranked number one by the College Football Playoff Committee. And I asked Josh Pastner, there's a lot of people saying that this is too much for UGA to handle. I said, do you agree with that? And he said, no, I don't really agree with that, but I will say this. That game against Georgia Tech at the end of the season will be the toughest game of the year for Georgia. And he said it's not even about, you know, the Georgia Tech of it all. And I'm paraphrasing. He said if everything is in front of you for that game, the pressure on that game is going to be crazy. So he wasn't saying, you know, Tech's going to beat them, but he was just talking about that game.
Here's how it plays out. Your top 10, it's Georgia, Bama, Notre Dame, Clemson, Oklahoma. That's your top 5. 6 through 10 is Ohio State, Penn State, TCU, Wisconsin, and the U. Where there's one thing, if you're a Georgia fan and you know you've got the SEC title game in front of you, that you cringe a little bit, Notre Dame's number 3. Notre Dame, if they run the table, is in the college football playoffs no matter what. And them being ranked that high, they will jump whoever loses in the SEC title game. So then it becomes whether Alabama or Georgia, just say they run it undefeated, they've got to figure out, can you get in over Clemson, Oklahoma, Ohio State, Penn State, TCU, Wisconsin, or Miami?
UGA needs their old coach, Mark Richt, and Miami to beat Notre Dame. That would be huge for the Dogs.
How about Dogs? Take care of your own business.
No, I
beat
get
Alabama.
It. I get it. But there is a possibility that if the Dogs are undefeated and they lose a close game to Alabama, that they could still make the college football playoff. But if Notre Dame has one loss, that ain't going to happen.
Very true.
Mark, okay, you see what I'm saying?
Look at Mark Owens.
Here's the thing. Instead of beat Alabama, beat South Carolina.
Oh, here we go.
Then start worrying about Alabama.
South Carolina's a plucky 6-2.
That's fantastic. Guess what? Doesn't matter. It's November 1st. Doesn't matter. Get past South Carolina. Then get past Auburn. Then we'll start talking about Alabama.
I will say this. Never in the history, and it's only a short history, have the top four teams in the initial ranking made it to the playoffs. So somebody in this group, maybe two teams in this group, won't be in the college football playoffs.
And all of the teams that were number one in the first poll did not end up winning the championship. The last two went to the championship game. Yes. But to me, that's not a big enough sample to draw as a trend. It's only three years. It's only 3 years.
It's a trap.
I tell you what a trend is. We were all looking forward to a Game 7 in the World Series, and we got it. Number three in our 5 at 10. It was a nail-biter last night once again. And, John, I like A.J. Hinch. I think he's doing a great job, but I think he screwed up last night in the sixth inning. You've got Verlander rolling, but now you got two men on, and you got Chris Taylor coming up. And he let him hit, and he hits a double and ties the game. And then, stupidly, he leaves him in the game again. And Corey Seager, you saw it. It was a blast. Should have been a three-run home run. It was a cold night at L.A. The ball wasn't traveling. Caught at the warning track. Sack fly guy scores 2-1. That's it. That's all you needed to win the game. And, like, people were saying, well, their bullpen stinks, and they had a great graphic of how bad their bullpen has been. But, John, sometimes you just need a fresh pitcher on the mound.
Yep.
And just bring a guy in. I don't know if he can last three. Let's just get this one out. Mm-hmm. Let's get out of this inning. And I thought A.J. Hinch screwed that up last night.
Well, in tonight, Game 7, it'll be 8:20 is the start here on Fox. Keuchel, Kershaw have also – it's basically Johnny Holstaff. Everybody that's arm functions will get a chance to throw to – I wouldn't be surprised if Verlander, if they need an out, goes back out there tonight. You're trying to win a World Series. It's been a tremendous one. I think it'll come down. I've still got the Astros winning. I picked them in 7 before the series. We'll hold on to that hope as well. Let's move on. Number 4 and our 5 of 10, a bunch of movement in the NFL. You mentioned at the top, Carolina, right at the trading deadline, trades Kelvin Benjamin to the Bills for some picks. I understand Kelvin Benjamin maybe doesn't get along with management, but you have no wide receivers, and you're a team right now that's without Greg Olsen. That is a head-scratch move if I've ever seen one for Carolina.
Cam Newton just said, if there's a guy you want to be in the foxhole with, it's Kelvin Benjamin. And 3-2-1, then they trade him. I guess Kelvin's like, yo, thanks for the vote of confidence, Cam. I'm just kidding. This is an obnoxiously terrible trade. John, when I say the legacy of the Carolina Panthers front office over the last 10 years, what comes to mind?
Cam Newton. I mean, that's I don't know how to
describe
their legacy.
Okay, they got one right, John. Yeah. Way to go. You got that one right. A monkey could have made that pick.
They've done a good job on the defensive side.
The point, you're supposed to throw shade on them when I set you up like that. This is a front office that is culpable of GM malpractice going back many years.
The last two seasons, absolutely. I'm with you. Because Josh Norman, that was a cluster blank. And what they just did with
the
Kelvin
Steve
Benjamin.
Smith treatment?
Yeah.
How'd that go down?
It didn't go so
way,
well.
Bad on them, good for us. And a Hawks and 76ers tonight. We get a look at Ben Simmons.
Yeah, Ben Simmons, a guy to watch. Your boy, Joel Embiid. Will he play
if
tonight?
If he plays, I don't know. Who knows?
Signs point to no. We take a break. We come back. Dan Quinn, what did he have to say on the morning show? You'll hear some of that next as Rick and I react to DQ on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com.
If they can do it, makes us harder, better, faster, stronger, working harder.
It's hump day, the day after Halloween, and we're just a few days from a Falcons victory over the Carolina Panthers. See, you see what a win does to my confidence and my belief.
I love it.
Believing, man. And, you know, they don't have Kelvin Benjamin anymore, and they didn't get anybody in return. They got a 3rd and 7th round pick, so screw Carolina. Hopefully we can beat their dysfunctionality this Sunday. Dude. How are those guys supposed to focus on the Falcons when their brother just got sent off to Buffalo?
Well,
I'm just saying this is a real issue for Carolina on the field and off the field.
Did you see the Thomas Davis tweet right after Kelvin Benjamin? He just did the steam face emoji, like the really red steam face. That's all he put. Just tweeted that.
What did Cam tweet out?
A picture of his outfit. I don't know.
I want to go to Cam Newton on Twitter and see if he...
I do not follow Cam, so I really couldn't tell you what he tweeted out.
Cam's Halloween outfit was like just a traditional striped suit.
Yeah. Yeah, he actually dressed as a normal person. Again, I'm a 42-year-old white guy who, let's be honest, my style now is hoodies and jeans. I wear Levi's because they're like $29 at most stores. I can get them at Marshall's or Ross a lot of times. And I wear hoodies because it's cold.
How many suits do you have?
I've got like 12 or 14 suits.
Oh. Wow. Well, we both gave you a while on that one. We and Paul, we got two, the married and the buried. You need one. Yeah, you need one for weddings and funerals.
You have to remember, with Coach Smith, when Smitty was a coach, we had to wear full suit and tie. So I didn't want to wear the same three suits every week. So I went to K&G, bought a couple of the suit separates and had some nice stuff going. But now, you know, Quinn, we go business casual, so I can go slacks and a sport coat, and I kind of leave it at that.
So Mark and I are out because we got shorts on, so we would make the plane, right?
No, you absolutely would not make the plane.
What if I wore a tie with my shorts?
Then it would say you like to party. So, yeah, you'd probably be on the plane.
And you look like a frat boy at one of these SEC games. So I went to Cam Newton on Twitter. It is Cameron Newton.
Mm-hmm.
You might know. He's kind of pump faking us with that. The last tweet, October 5th, it looks like some one-on-one interview. So he has not reacted on Twitter, but it is widely publicized that he's boys with Kelvin Benjamin. He's got to be butthurt about
so
this.
So hopefully, and I think they do a presser up there today in Carolina, mm-hmm. maybe tomorrow we'll get a little Cam either walking out of said press conference, or maybe you'll get some sound, how he feels about Kelvin Benjamin. What's that?
You know what they're going to do?
Ignore.
They're going to make up some kind of excuse for him not to go to the podium today because mm-hmm. it's the day after the trade. Well, I could be wrong about that. It may be like an obligation and he just has to do it, but I have a feeling that Carolina's going to try to shield him from the media.
Or there'll be that memo that's passed out to the Carolina media. You are not allowed to ask about Kelvin Benjamin.
Exactly.
Yeah, it'll be something like that.
Well, so then why have the press conference?
Exactly. Dan Quinn is on each and every Wednesday morning with John and Hugh. Does a great job, John and Hugh, talking to him. First thing they asked him, though, was about the sloppy game, and is he blaming it on the weather?
Probably a little bit of both. Rule two for us, that's no excuses. So we'd like to have some back. Yeah, we thought we had about five totals in the game. But that's kind of part of ball. It was one of those days, Hugh, it was just, in the old days, that would have been a mud bath game, you know. And for us, it was just from start to finish raining. But that's part of it. And we know both teams had made some plays. Both teams had some bad breaks. But here's what I was pumped about our guys. It just, they went for it the whole time. A bad break took place. There wasn't anybody, sulking or putting their head down. They just kept hustling. And that part I really respect about our group. So now we're getting into our division, and we're excited about that.
And so in terms of, I like what he's saying right there, because our birds made a ton of mistakes, from the center quarterback snap exchange problems to Hooper dropping a touchdown. There were penalties. There was stuff. But he's right. They never blinked. They had a short memory about it, and they just kept chopping
yep.
wood and coming at you like the Terminator. And he mentioned, John, another thing here. He said rule number two is no excuses. And I was thinking that, on my couch watching that game. I get it. It is nonstop rain. It is difficult. I don't expect this to be a perfect work of art, but four mm-hmm. center quarterback exchange problems is way, way too much. But I was having that feeling. We have to win this game.
Yep.
Okay, we can't fall to 3-4
nope.
and then on Monday try to calm the masses by saying it was a deluge and a tsunami. Nobody's buying that nope. or listening to it, so go get it done, and they did.
Yeah, and here's the thing you can sell now. You're at the exact same place that you were a year ago. Now, are you playing as well as you were a year ago? No. Anybody with a naked eye can see this team is not executing the way they did a season ago. But your record is still exactly the same, so everything's still in front of you with all your division games starting this week. DQ was asked about the Falcons' defense. Is it starting to shape up?
I would hope it could be, and I thought in that game we were a lot closer to how we can play. And it was much more stout, but also it was really good team ball, Hugh, and in the right gap, playing it square, and we knew not only was the weather going to be, a fact that there was going to be, more runs, but we thought that was going to be something that for the last few weeks it hadn't felt good. And so for them to make sure that communication was right and playing in the run game, we got another tough test against us in the run game. But that helped a lot to make sure we were all on the same page and playing it in the same way.
But here's the thing, John. Love me some DQ, mm-hmm. and I like what he said there. But I'm not buying it. I can't buy it yet. Buffalo did what they wanted on the ground. We could not get to Shady McCoy. We could not get to Tyrod Taylor. Jay Ajayi ran that ball down our throats.
Yep.
Jarvis Landry kind of sort of ran the ball down our throats. And then you go up to New England, and we get Rex Burkheaded.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And then so you shut down the Jets. Matt Forte, Bilal Powell, Josh McCown, Robbie Anderson. These are not household names. Forte's a household name. None of these other guys are household names. So we shut them down, kind of, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying, John? Like, I can't even give them the credit for turning the corner. It's the Jets, okay? Do it against Carolina. Hold McCaffrey to 3 grabs and 33 yards. You know what I'm saying? Do it against some legitimate, big-time offensive talent.
What I will say with that, and I agree with what you're saying, the fits were better the effort was better. I saw Ruben taking on a double team and holding up and being stout and allowing our linebackers to come in. There wasn't the overruns. They weren't missing gaps. There were times against Jay Ajayi, especially Shady McCoy, where two guys would run into one hole and boom, Shady McCoy would shake and bake and he's out the backside. The next thing you know, he's got a 15, 20-yard gain. It's a lot of time about gap integrity, and Dan Quinn talks about that all the time. And it's about your guys up front taking on the blocks and allowing your linebackers to flow downhill and make plays. If nothing else, they did that. Now, you'll see more this week because Christian McCaffrey's got that in his game. And if he's able to boop, boop, and shake out of there, you got to have some guys covering up the backside.
I hope I'm wrong about this. I hope, John, all of the stuff that we're talking about carries over to Carolina. Mm-hmm. But if they run for $160
right.
on 5 yards per carry, then we will know that it was just a one-game anomaly playing a bad offensive team.
Yeah, and all bets are going to be off at that point if that's how it plays out. Hey, here's some more from Dan Quinn talking about divisional games and do they mean more.
The division always has more attention. Both teams know each other well. And both teams, players know each other well. How do I guard this guy? How do I rush this guy? You know, those are things that are kind of the game within the game. So it's an exciting one for us because, it's been a long time to wait to get to the division. And we know, we've said it all along, that's where our focus lies. That hasn't changed. And it'll be a really physical game against, a good division team.
Well, everybody's been selling, let's get into the division. It'll all make more sense. I need to see it to believe it with this team and the way the flow of the season is going. John, I got to hear this cut right here. DQ, mm-hmm. and again, on every Wednesday with John and Hugh at about 8 o'clock, 8:15, 8:10, something like that. But he was asked about this Kelvin Benjamin trade, and does it affect your planning for this game on Sunday?
It doesn't necessarily change our preparation, maybe just changes, how they would feature the players. And Kelvin missed the 2015 season, played last year and this year. So, we'll look back to see, how they featured, some of the other guys when he wasn't a part of it. And they've added some new players, as weapons this year, with McCaffrey and with Samuel. So that to me is, is as big a part of it as well. But, I've always thought he was, the size and strength that he played with, he was tough to guard because of, that kind of length.
He was a huge receiver. He was a guy that could body up your defensive backs. And the Falcons, quite frankly, don't have a big defensive back. Desmond Trufant and Robert Alford, they're not big guys. They're not Richard Sherman where they're 6'2", 6'3". They're 6-foot players. So Kelvin Benjamin was a guy that could always give you problems. I think, though, with Carolina, adding some of the speed, and he mentioned Curtis Samuel, getting him or Russell Shepard on the field is a different dynamic than what they had on the outside. I know they had Ted Ginn a year ago. Ted Ginn's Ted Ginn. He'll have one or two really nice games and then four or five where he disappears. You get some young speed on the outside. It's something that Cam Newton, quite frankly, hasn't had in a long time.
All right, so let's go back to 2015. And by the way, my reading between the lines of DQ right there, he's kind of like, We got to start from scratch with this wide receiver crew because the guys that were there in 2015, Ted Ginn, gone. Mm-hmm. Jericho Cotchery, gone. Devin Funchess, still there. Corey Brown, gone. Mike Tolbert, gone. And then you've got Greg Olsen, who caught 77 grabs in 2015, Cam's MVP season. He is gone due to injury.
Yep.
Okay, there is you can't look back to that 2015 game and extrapolate anything from it. Not a damn thing.
Nope.
Because Funchess wasn't the number one receiver back then.
He barely played back then.
Exactly. And and I also heard, and I'm kind of being sarcastic about this, but DQ threw a little bit of shade on the ideology of this trade, mm-hmm. talking about what a handful Kelvin Benjamin has been, and I totally agree with him.
Hey, here's Dan Quinn and his thoughts on one Cameron Newton.
More of the same of what he can do, because if the run-pass options that take place, he's back to, really saying, all right, we're designed runs to him. That happens for sure again. I know that maybe early outside of them, they thought, okay, well, there'd be less runs and that, and it's really just the same as it's been. So it's the size, the strength, the ability to extend the third down plays. That part of their game is really intact. And then how they're featuring the new guys, like their running back has 49 catches, or one of their running backs, not their running back. One of their backs. So that's a new weapon of how to use guys in the backfield, out of the backfield. And then they're always going to try to take their shots down the field, with some of the speed that they have. So it felt familiar in terms of what they're doing. It's just how they're featuring some of their new players into the offense, Hugh, I think, is the biggest change. Because scheme-wise, it's pretty familiar. They got a real style about how they play, much like we do.
So, John, what Dan Quinn just told us right there is that he plays fantasy football and that he perceives Christian McCaffrey as the guy, which he is, in fantasy football to have in that backfield. So, DQ, shout out. Did not know you were a fantasy player.
I would love. I know coaches do not play fantasy football. They don't have time for it. But just to look over and to see Dan over there on the sideline during the timeout going, oh, my, I can't believe Christian McCaffrey fumbled that ball and cost me 5 points. And John Michaels cockamamie lead.
Hey, you know he would have the Falcons defense.
Oh, absolutely.
On his team.
Hey, we take a break. We come back. Slice of lifetime. Let's talk about Halloween that just passed. Maybe you have to take some shots at neighbors or neighborhoods around the way. That's all next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Slice of Life is brought to you by Shane Company. Blow her mind, not your budget, with an engagement ring from Shane Co., your friend in the jewelry business. Halloween on the back end. That is the topic today in our Slice of Life.
Yeah.
You want to know what I did for Halloween last night, John?
Watch the World Series?
I took a nap.
So you had lights off, no candy,
yep.
Nothing?
Lights off. No. And Charity had jury duty. She's getting tortured by our judicial system. Literally.
She was
taking a nap, too.
Do you have a lot of kids that walk around your neighborhood?
Yeah. Decent amount, yeah. Now, I don't think it's like yours, John, but we got some kiddies. We got some kiddos walking around. The doorbell did not ring one time, which was awesome.
Well, people have now learned that the outside light means either ring the doorbell or not.
Thank you.
Here's where I want to put my neighborhood on blast. There were probably 2/3 of the neighbors had their lights off. Okay, that you know what? You don't want to participate in Halloween, fine. Be a Scrooge. We had ours off only because we were actually out walking around with our kids. Here's the people I don't like. You've got Halloween decorations up. The porch light is on, which means come ring the doorbell. It's well within time. It's like 7:30. We ring the bell. Nobody there. Ring the bell. You can see people standing in the kitchen, yet they don't come answer the door. Like, really? That's what you're going to do?
So hold on a second. Are they just living their lives with their lights on in their homes, or do they have Halloween decorations?
They have Halloween decorations.
They have inviting Halloween decorations.
They've got the pumpkins up. Yeah, they've got, like, the cobwebs.
Then you got to open the door.
Yeah.
But like us, you know, some of the lights are on if you look through the shades and stuff, but don't knock. We're not inviting you. But you're right. If you have a bunch of Halloween paraphernalia out there, you're inviting people to ring the doorbell.
Here's the second thing to put some people on blast. And I saw one from Knox Bardeen. One of his kids got a pack of ramen noodles. Really? You put a pack of ramen noodles in there?
All right, it's funny you mentioned that Knox was just in here, and I was joking with him about it, and he said that Knox Jr. asked him to cook that for him last night because he was still hungry.
Well, okay, that's understandable, but could you give out something better? My son got a custard, like a custard in a package. Who's giving this out? And why are you giving my kids pretzels? It's a candy time of the year.
Maybe they ran out of everything. We've done that before. We've run out of candy.
You turn your lights off.
We start flicking quarters in there. Start pitching dimes. Hey, kid. Shot in there.
Am I wrong for being mad about that? I mean, I'm not mad. I'm just kind of looking like...
For giving ramen noodles?
No. My kids didn't get ramen noodles. Getting a wrapped custard... Mm.
Are you going to eat it?
No.
So are you going to eat it?
My kids open it up and go, what the hell is this?
Let me get this straight. Mm-hmm. So not the ramen noodles. What was the other? The pretzels.
Mm-hmm.
So was it like one of the fun size, like Snyder pretzels?
No, it was like the airplane size that had little Halloween packaging that said, you probably got like 9 pretzels in
brutal.
There.
Brutal.
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
There's a lot wrong with that.
Yeah, I love pretzels. I'm trying to lose some weight. Pretzels rock for me. And by the way, they fit the low cholesterol diet, but not a damn kid wanting a Snicker
really?
Bar.
How much candy is in that kid's bag? One bag of pretzels ain't going to ruin Halloween.
Like kids don't like pretzels.
Yeah.
They want like cheese puffs and stuff like that.
We repackaged them
and gave
them to
booty.
Other kids.
They want pirate booty.
There were some kids walking by as we were walking out. Hey, kids, we got some. And we gave them the pretzels. You can take them. I didn't want
Do you have
them.
The one family giving out toothbrush?
We did not have that.
We had the dentist in our neighborhood growing up every year. All right. Dr. Farah, good to see you. Here's our annual toothbrush. Thank you.
We actually got some here at 92.9 The Game yesterday.
Did he remind you to floss, too?
Yeah. He's like, all right, kids, don't eat all your candy in one night.
You okay. See you next week. I know I got a cavity. All right, Mark, how was Halloween for you yesterday?
Awesome. Listen, here's a big shock. Do-do-do-do-do. I love Halloween.
Oh, I do too.
I love it for the dress-up part because I finally now have a partner in crime that I can dress up with. And I'll post this picture at Rick and John 929.
You mean Grant doesn't come over and dress up like college days?
No, we're the Shield. We dress up as the Shield. He's Dean Ambrose and I'm Roman Reigns.
You're almost built like Roman Reigns.
A couple of years ago. Thank you. A couple of years ago. It's Earthquake and Tugboat. Sorry.
Nice.
Wow. No, that would be me and you.
Rick's completely lost right now.
Somebody got that. A couple years ago, I went as a gator hater, and she was my gator bite. 2 years ago, she was Ariel, and I was King Triton. And last night, she was Rapunzel, and I was Flynn Rider.
Nice.
Eugene from Tangled from Rapunzel, and I loved it. And here's the funny part. So we go to this huge party. I sent you guys the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Food, booze, everyone. I mean, this family did it upright.
How drunk did she get?
How were the jello shots?
She jello was shots, yeah, good call.
Hammered. She was, yeah, and sitting on the counter, I'm like, oh, that's cool. You got some, what is it, like little virgin jello shots for the kids? And I'm like, no. Well, those are for the adults. Well, you're damn right, trick or treat to me. So we're doing jello shots on Halloween. All right, kids. Let's go walk through the neighborhood. And by the end of the night, she was done.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
She was done. Her bag was full. But, you know, I'm feeling good. We've had, you know, a couple of drinks. I throw her on my shoulders, and we keep popping house to house. She's like, Dad, I'm done. Come on, kid, one more. Let's go do one more. Because at that point, it's not even for her. It's for me.
I'm not going to lie. We were the last family walking around, and we had to tell our kids, like, all right, it's 9 o'clock. Like, we're done. No. That house still has their lights on. Yeah, that's because they just got home from work. We're not going to go knock on their door. We were the last family out there. I scared a couple of kids. A lot of the older, like, 12 or 13-year-old kids walked by. They were like, dude, that costume is awesome. So I had a lot of fun with it. I'm like you, Mark. I had a roadie. I had a nice, like, 32-ounce cup. I did have a minor emergency in my house yesterday, though. I told Paul this before the show. I had my Red Bull. The bottle of Tito's was empty. I didn't realize our Tito's were done. There's no Tito's left. Dukes, if you have any hookup, I need some Tito's.
Who killed the Tito's, you or Urania?
Urania must have, and she left an empty bottle sitting on the counter.
I'm not mad at you, Urania. Get your Tito's in.
Yeah, but
girl,
throw it away so I know to stop and go get some more. So I had to drink Bacardi, which
Bacardi goes okay. That is a nice plan B if you're out of vodka.
When you're ready for vodka and you get rum instead, it's not the same. Preacher Man, how was trick-or-treating there in Palatial Alpharetta?
Oh, it was fine. Amy takes the boys.
You can get full-size candy bars up there, don't you?
In some houses, yeah, the boys did come home with some full-size candy bars, I ain't gonna lie. Amy took the boys around the neighborhood. They hit all the houses that had the lights on appropriately. I stayed home and gave out candy.
Now, do you sit outside?
No, you knock on the door, I'll open it, I'll give you candy.
See, when I do the candy, when I'm the designated sit-at-home, give out the candy, I put a chair out in front, and I'm not getting up and down from the TV.
My door is not that far from the TV, so it's fine.
And kudos to the one family. You know, we're going all night. The one family sitting out there with the card table giving out candy. And the guy says, anybody need a refill? Any adults need a refill?
Nice.
I'm like, yeah, sure, no problem. He's like, I got red wine. I got white wine. I got some whiskey. You need a cold beer. Like, this is the best family ever. Well done.
The best family in our neighborhood was right on the corner. I think a dad and his son live there. The older gentleman and I think it's his son. Maybe it's his brother. I'm not sure. But they had, like, the fog light. They had props out in the yard. And one of the guys was dressed as a werewolf. And he was hiding behind a black tarp. So Kane and I walk up, and Kane goes to get the candy, and all of a sudden the fog light hits, and you hear, and this werewolf comes running out of the garage. Kane was like, what? And took off. And I was like, dude, go get your candy. It was awesome. We love to see the families get involved.
John shoves his kid out of the way. I'm running!
I actually speared the werewolf. I acted like I was Roman Reigns.
Did you spear him with a trident? Don't answer that. Preacher Man, I got one more question for you. The full-size candy bars, are they enough of a reward for the property taxes you're paying up there?
No.
I didn't think so.
Preacher Man's entire
It's good living up there, though,
goes
man.
Goes to taxes. Hey, we take a break. We come back. The first college football top 25 poll is out. Did the committee get it right with Georgia at number one? Let's debate that next with your phone calls and text at 404-741-0929 on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
We're all pumped for all the guys there, for Kirby, the staff, the players, and I know they got a lot, to play for, and some funny with the rankings. You know, it's not where you start, it's where you end up, and I'm sure that's the message that Kirby's sharing with his group.
That's Dan Quinn talking about the Dogs, his Dogs, being number one atop the college football playoff rankings. The committee named it last night. I want to tell you where we are going to be on Friday. That's right, the midday show with Rick and John, your boys, Rick and John. The Preacher Man will be there as well. Maybe a little MO for Lucky. Nah, he's throwing his hands at me. Anyway, the midday show will be broadcasting live from McCray's Tavern in Midtown. Tell everybody, shout it from the top of mountaintops. Rick and John broadcasting live from McCray's Tavern in Midtown from 10 to 2 on Friday. Take your lunch break, enjoy cold beer, delicious food, enjoy buffalo rolls, hand-cut seafood, and steaks. The live broadcast from McCray's Tavern is presented by Bud Light. Here's to beer. You can always count on America's favorite light lager, Bud Light, famous among friends.
Yeah, I can't wait. I love being out on a Friday and getting a chance to meet the people. So come on by, have some lunch with us. Chop up. Let's talk some college football. We'll talk some NFL. Again, Preacher Man, he'll give you oiled up bro hugs. He likes to. He'll have the, you know, the nice Victoria's Secret lotion on. He's ready to roll on a Friday.
Smells good.
He's mumbling to himself like, I'm going to kill you at some point before we get to McCray's on Friday.
Where's my keys? I got to go to the car.
No, I will run you down and catch you, hopefully, because I'm not really fast. All right, let's talk some college football, though. We'll take some calls. 404-741-0929. First playoff rankings out, and the Georgia Bulldogs are the number one team in the country. I called it yesterday. I thought they'd be ranked number one by the committee. They are. I want to put this in perspective right now at 11 o'clock on a Wednesday morning. This time, one calendar year ago, Georgia was 4-4. They were 4-4, and now they're the number one team in the country. Kirby Smart, kudos to you for what you've done. Sticking with your guy, Jim Chaney, making things work offensively, and they've got one bad blank defense right now, and they're the number one team in the country.
They do. I think the committee, I think they did a really good job with this because they told us a few things. Resume is everything, and head-to-head is everything. Those are the two things that they showed us, okay? Georgia has a better resume than Alabama. Alabama fans, don't be butthurt. That is what's up here. Both teams are dominating everybody. But Georgia went to Notre Dame and won.
Mm-hmm.
Alabama doesn't have even close to as good of a win as that. Resume is everything. The committee is not saying that Georgia would beat Alabama on a neutral field. That's not what they're saying. They're saying they have the better resume. They're saying Notre Dame has the better resume. Clemson as well. And Clemson also, they're getting some name brand benefit of the doubt here a little bit. And the one call that I had correctly yesterday, I did say that Clemson would be in the four, predicted that the committee would do it that way. But, John, in terms of resume, we documented that. Head-to-head, mm-hmm. All right? You've got Oklahoma ahead of Ohio State, Ohio State ahead of Penn State.
How it should be.
It's how it should be. Now, the interesting thing, and it goes back to resume is everything, Wisconsin and Miami don't have great resumes. They got a great record, but they don't have great resumes. And so I like what the committee has done here, but the two takeaways for me, resume is everything and head-to-head is everything.
Yeah, and it may change how teams decide to schedule because I'm looking right now, and Alabama tried. They tried to schedule a power out-of-conference team. It's not their fault that Florida State stinks. It's not their fault that Florida State's a 2-5 team. Their other three games out-of-conference, fairly lackluster. Colorado State's a decent mid-major program. Fresno and Mercer are just throwaway games. And that's typically how you're going to see everybody's schedule. There's going to be one really good out-of-conference game. There's going to be a mid-major-ish or, you know, lower-tier Power 5 team. And then it's going to typically be two slappies. That's how it's going to be because nobody wants to schedule three or four great teams because then you have an opportunity to lose some football games. I'm not mad at the rankings at all. I think Clemson's a hair overranked to me. I think what's been glossed over a lot for Clemson is the fact that they lost already on the football season to a decent Syracuse team at best. I think you're overvaluing what they did for Louisville because they blew out Louisville. Louisville's not a good football team. They're a 500 squad. They get a lot of credit for beating Auburn, and kudos for that. That is still a very, very good win on the season. And obviously going to Virginia Tech and dominating them the way that they did is a huge win for them as well. But their out-of-conference is not great by any shakes either. It's Auburn. South Carolina's a decent team, and then they had Kent State and I've heard the Citadel, so they had another slappy in there as well.
Colorado State, John, right now 4-1 in the Mountain West Mountain Division. It's a little redundant, and 6-3 overall. Colorado State is a solid team. They're not a great team, but they're a solid team. One of the better group of five teams. And Vegas just had a bad point spread on that game. That period, end of story. They had a 28-point spread on that game too early in the season, and Alabama hadn't developed enough anger and hunger at that point yet. But Rick and John here breaking down the College Football Playoff Committee's rankings last night. Did they get it right?
Here's what I'll say. I am surprised that they did the head-to-head after talking to Bill Hancock. When we had him in here, he didn't say that head-to-head would hold any more weight than anything else, but the way they ranked it, it shows that head-to-head holds weight. Oklahoma above Ohio State, who they beat, Ohio State above Penn State that you mentioned, it's letting you know that the head-to-head games, at least in November, are done and they're taken into consideration. It'll be interesting to see because Georgia's still got power games in front of them. Alabama still has power games. Notre Dame, Clemson, everybody's got big games left in the last month of the season. Does the head-to-head ranking hold true to form as the season progresses?
We'll see. How can you not do that? Like, if you're the committee, you have to stay and I try to stay consistent with my rankings that we do for Knox Bardina, 92.9thegame.com. I'm not trying to take a team that's 20th and all of a sudden shoot them up to 8. I don't want to do that. You got to maintain some consistency. So if you're starting right now and the precedent is set, very obviously, John, that head-to-head is a major factor. You have to keep doing it. So if I don't have an example. So if Virginia Tech beats Miami, okay, Miami should not be ranked ahead of Virginia Tech, even though they would both have one loss.
Unless Virginia Tech ends up having a second loss, then you can
right,
see
no,
that.
Right, no, I'm saying like after this week's game.
Yeah, no chance.
No
they
chance.
Shouldn't.
But, I mean, you know, Miami is 10 right now and Virginia Tech is 13. Maybe they drop Miami one or two spots and only push Virginia Tech one spot. I'm hypothetically speaking here. They would presumably leap, hopefully they would leapfrog Va Tech over Miami. Sorry for the example there of with your team, John. Here's where I don't agree with the committee. I think Iowa State is the best two-loss team in college football. I would not have them below Auburn, and it's one spot.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal. Auburn is 14. Iowa State is 15. But Auburn is getting a bunch of credit for a loss to Clemson.
Mm-hmm.
A loss. Okay, they beat Mississippi State. Good win. You lose to LSU. That's a bad loss. And to me, Iowa State has two wins against top four teams.
Yeah, in the grand scheme, though, now that LSU is 19th, it doesn't seem as bad of a loss as it did at the time that it actually happened. I mean, Auburn's a team that's going to look back at that and probably cost them any chance of being in a playoff because you lost the second game of the game that you were up 20-0. I do agree. Iowa State, by virtue of the win over TCU, who's still a top 10 team, and over Oklahoma, who's still a top 10 team, Iowa State should be ahead of Auburn. But again, we're splitting hairs with that one because it's a one-ranking scenario. Iowa State still has big games left. Auburn still has big games left. That'll all play itself out.
Rick and John here chopping up the College Football Playoff Committee's first rankings. And John, and if you all want to get interactive with this, holler at the preacher, man, 404-741-0929. We're simply asking, did they get it right? In terms of the mess that is Auburn, LSU, and Mississippi State, they've all cannibalized each other.
Mm-hmm.
LSU has beaten Auburn. Auburn trucked Mississippi State. Mississippi State trucked LSU. And right now you got Auburn at 14, Mississippi State at 16, LSU at 19. Are you okay with the cannibalization of how they have that stack?
Yeah, I'd have to really go through and digest who's where, but I'm not mad one way or the other with Auburn, Mississippi State, and LSU. Really where I stop, and I don't want to say stop concern, but stop really thinking that anybody that's got two losses or more, you're probably out anyway.
No doubt.
So from Auburn down, and Iowa State might be the one example that's able to leapfrog everybody if they're able to continue to win. But I think from Auburn down, you're not getting in the playoffs unless it's 100% complete utter chaos, meaning everybody has two or three losses at the end of the year like it's 2007.
Here's the ironic thing, dude. If Wisconsin and Miami are getting straight dissed by the committee right now, they're looking at who they played, and they're not impressed at all. That's what they're telling us, putting Wisconsin at 9 at 8-0 and Miami at 10 at 7-0. But both of these teams, if they handle their business,
they're in,
will make the decision impossible for the committee not to put them in the four. So they're kind of dissing the undefeated teams right now. Think about Wisconsin. They could go the entire regular season without really playing anybody, win the Big Ten championship game, presumably against Ohio State, and make the college football playoff. That actually, John, is not a good precedent.
No.
They're basically telling teams, schedule a bunch of slappies, win them all, win your conference title game, and then you don't have to take on an FSU or you don't have to take on an Auburn-Clemson type of game. It's actually kind of a bad look for college football.
Their division's horrible. It's not their fault that the Big Ten West is just dreadful. Nebraska's awful. Iowa's pretty mediocre at best. They're the Mia Khalifa of college football. but listen to their out-of-conference. Utah State, FAU, and BYU. Now, again, BYU's a team that 4 years ago when you scheduled them looked like they were going to be a 9 or 10-win team, and you go on the road and get a good win. BYU's one of the worst teams in college football.
Mm-hmm.
Let's run through some calls. 404-741-0929. Did the committee get it right? Larry's in Snellville. He'll lead us off on 92.9 The Game. Larry, how you doing?
Just fine. How are you, gentlemen?
Doing good.
Great.
I just first want to compliment y'all on your y'all's programs because you gentlemen don't all agree and air it out. And what y'all have all said is true. This is the next 4 weeks going to determine. And but Georgia has got, they are a unit. I mean, all the players, the coaches, there's no weaknesses. They play their position. Vince Lombardi ages ago said, you can't help if the other team beats you. Don't beat yourself. They're not making any mistakes. They're hanging on to the ball. They're getting turnovers. They're shutting you down. And that's all you can do at this time is the best of your ability. But they're a unit. They're cohesive. Because without that, I don't care how much talent you got, it's you don't have anything. And what I like about their running backs, they got a stable. One running back goes down, they got two others that are going to step up. And that's a blessing.
Yeah, they've actually got about three. And, yeah, you're right. They play as a unit. They've done a great job. You know, should they be number one? Yeah, the body of work allows them to be number one. I don't get bent out of shape this time of the year because, as we talked about early on, the top four has never stayed the same throughout the duration of these rankings. And there's so many games. Clemson, NC State this week, Miami, Virginia Tech, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State. Those are all elimination games, basically. The winners stay alive. The losers are out. You could potentially have two or three of your top ten go down once again this week. Let's go back to the phones. Go to Kyle in Rome on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Kyle, did the committee get it right?
I don't think so. You're going to put a team like Clemson that lost on the road at Syracuse. I understand they had a quarterback that went down. But you're going to put them at number four over an undefeated Wisconsin. To put them at nine? Are you kidding me? I just don't. And not to mention, they put Ohio State, who got blown out at home by Oklahoma, ahead of an undefeated Wisconsin. I feel like some of these teams are getting overlooked. That are, I mean, yeah, you might not have the strength of schedule that some of the other teams do, but you're undefeated. That stands for something. That means something. I mean, this is college football. We're talking D1, okay? And I just think it gets overlooked, and it's disrespectful in my opinion.
Well, look, John and I agree with you, okay? We have Wisconsin 3 and Miami 4 in our rankings right now, but the College Football Playoff Committee does not see it the same way, and as we explained, it's all about resume. You cannot sit here and promote Wisconsin's resume. You can't promote Miami's resume yet. You just can't do it versus these other teams that have taken on big boys and beat them. And, John, our preview, the caller right there, that was a great call. We love it, man. Keep calling and keep listening. Mentioned the injury to Kelly Bryant and how that impacted that loss to Syracuse. I have heard that the College Football Playoff Committee definitely considered that when ranking Clemson number four. In other words, they are giving Clemson. So if you're a Clemson fan, you've made it. Not only did you win a national championship, you've made it. You have entered the benefit of the doubt elite class of college football because they're giving them the benefit of the doubt on the Bryant injury. Also, now that Clemson's won a title, you have that brand name, John. Sure. And all of that works to them being in the top four, whether it's right or wrong.
Yeah, I don't agree with that theory that a guy is hurt, so that will just discount that loss. It's a team game. I know it's your quarterback. That's all fine. Do we discount Florida State for having five more wins then? Because DeAndre Francois is out, didn't seem to hurt Georgia, who lost their starting quarterback, the third series of the year, and then the next week with a true freshman quarterback goes on the road to win a game against a better team.
Super quick, and we can go back to the phone lines. If Florida State, they're 2-5 right now, if they were 4-3, Alabama would be number one atop the poll right
and
now.
And Miami would be about six. That's probably how it would be right about now. Let's go to Eddie in Ackworth on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Eddie, what's up?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are we today?
Doing good. How are you?
Great.
I'm doing great. As a Georgia grad, I'll tell you right now, I'm dang proud of my university. And if anybody can handle this number one ranking, it's Kirby Smart. That's one thing I'm really pleased about. He knows he's been there. He knows how to handle this with the team. All that being said, I think the committee got it right. And I was actually shocked because I thought Alabama was going to be number one. Just because it's Alabama, but it looks to me like the committee may have learned from last year and they put on some blinders somewhat and look strictly at this year, which is all it should be based on, as opposed to last year when Ohio State got the jump for whatever reason over Penn State, even though Penn State beat them, which I thought was ridiculous. And now they put Alabama at two, and everybody across the country is like, oh, it's Alabama. They're going to be the number one ranked team.
I mean, it's the benefit of the doubt club. You want to be in the benefit of the doubt club. Right now, John, it's Notre Dame, it's Ohio State, it's Alabama, and it's Clemson. I can't even put Georgia in the benefit of the doubt club yet. I have a question for you, a trivia question.
All right.
Who was the first number one overall team in the first college football playoff ranking?
Was it Mississippi State?
Boom! John Michaels for the win off the top rope like Randy Macho Man Savage.
Didn't know I was going to get that one.
That was
did you?
Dope. Nice job. Nice job. By the way, they did not win the national title.
Matter of fact, I think they lost that week. They might have been gone right.
They did play in a one of the six on New Year's Day or whatever.
Didn't
they call
Georgia Tech beat the crap out of them?
I can't remember.
Most likely. Hey, Wes Mitchell from Gamecock Central. He'll preview South Carolina and Georgia next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com.
As a high school kid, you want to be that guy that gets all the passes, have all the fame or whatever. I mean, that's just a high school mentality. As you grow and come on to the collegiate level, all that changes. You get to know the nitty-gritty. You get to know what you need to do and what you're able to display.
That's Terry Godwin, receiver for our Dogs, and he understands, yo, you can't always be the guy when you have a stable of running backs, a terrific quarterback, a bunch of good wide receivers, and you're part of an overall plan to win a national championship. That was a very heady, philosophical soundbite right there from Terry Godwin. And right now, we are going to get smarter about the South Carolina Gamecocks. On the WadeFord.com hotline, it is Wes Mitchell from Gamecock Central previewing, of course, the big game between the Cox and the Dogs on Saturday. Wes, how you doing? Good morning.
Hey, guys, how's it going? I'm good, man.
It's going great, man. It's going great. So the South Carolina season has been really, really interesting to me. You guys take out NC State early, the Deebo Samuel of it all. You get a good win elsewhere in the season here to be 6-2. Do you feel like the 6-2 record for South Carolina is a little puffed up, or do you feel like this team is as good as a 6-2 team?
Well, I think certainly you can go through the record in conference play and probably pick out where South Carolina hasn't beaten a ton of teams that have a lot of good wins on their schedule. But I think at the same time, when you look at where South Carolina was just 2 years ago, you know, the team that Muschamp inherited won three games the previous season. They won six last year and got to bowl eligibility, but then lost the bowl game to finish 6-7. So now to sit at 6-2, just eight games in, you know, I think South Carolina fans will take that every single time. I think right now this was a huge rebuild for Muschamp and company. So any signs of progress is a positive thing. Now, certainly, I think you look at the Vegas line, and, you know, Vegas doesn't really, to me, care much about records. You know, they have their way of doing things, and you look at that thing sitting there at 24, 25, 23 points, and you can certainly see that this maybe isn't your typical 8-0 versus 6-2 matchup that you might see sometimes.
Hey, Wes, Steve Spurrier a few years back famously said, you want to catch Georgia in the beginning of the year. I'm not going to do a Steve Spurrier impression, but you want to catch Georgia at the beginning of the year because they're going to have guys suspended. Well, you catch them right now towards the end of the year. Do you think it would have been advantageous this year for South Carolina to have played Georgia earlier in the season?
Well, I think just maybe from a sense of them possibly having Deebo Samuel still on the field probably would have helped South Carolina. I think it still would have been a tough matchup because, you know, this is a team that just has really found a way to win games, even though to me they're definitely not the most talented team that Will Muschamp's probably going to have at South Carolina. There's still holes in this roster. There's still depth issues, and they've just kind of found a way to win a bunch of close games. And, you know, there's sort of that little portion, I feel like, of the SEC, sort of that middle to bottom, I guess, section of the conference where there's a lot of teams that are pretty average, but South Carolina has been able to beat all the other teams they've played, save Kentucky, that are sort of in that same conversation in the middle of the conference. So, you know, they've found a way to win games, but I think to answer your question, that the fact that they would have maybe had Deebo Samuel, he's such a difference maker for them, and when you look at their roster, he's maybe the one guy that every time he steps on the field is going to be one of the better football players on that field, is a difference maker, can make big plays for them. And they, you know, I think that's probably the biggest compliment you can say about this team right now is that they've still found a way to win without him suited up.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And obviously the Kentucky game was totally buzzkilled by the Deebo Samuel injury. And so we've got right now Wes Mitchell on the WadeFord.com hotline from Gamecock Central talking about the South Carolina side of things. We like to get you all smarter. Have one of the scribes or one of the broadcasters for a team go behind enemy lines with your boys, Rick and John. And Jake Bentley has had, it's almost like a tale of two seasons, right? I mean, the first four games, he throws four interceptions. He has not thrown an interception in any of the last four games against A&M, Arkansas, Tennessee, and Vandy. The stats say he is improving as the year goes along. Does your eye test tell you the same thing?
Yeah, and you know, I think he's done a really good job this year of playing within this offense. You know, I think, and you know, obviously South Carolina fans around here have been a little bit sort of upset about the offensive numbers this year. They haven't been great overall, but I think when you look at what South Carolina wants to do offensively, they're not some hurry-up team. You know, it's not a team that's going to go no huddle, that's going to sort of put their defense in bad spots. Everything they do is sort of designed to win games a particular way, and that starts with not turning the football over. That starts with basically getting the offense into a position where you're not going to have negative plays. You know, they had, I'm sure, more negative plays last year than probably any other team in the conference. This year they've put a lot more on Jake Bentley as far as setting the protections, changing plays at the line of scrimmage, and really getting South Carolina out of bad plays. So it's kind of a mindset offensively, you know, much like, and for different reasons, but much like Jake Fromm, you know, you see the different sort of conversations about, you know, can Georgia pass the football? And I think anybody that watches you guys probably is going to say, well, they haven't had to throw the football much. Well, you know, I think Jake Bentley's numbers are kind of solid, but I think the kid actually could have, from a talent standpoint, could have way better numbers, but they've sort of asked him to play within the confines of this offense. And as the year has gone on, you've seen him really do a good job of not turning the football over. The big thing they preach within this program is sort of one of their key mantras is protect the football on offense, turn the football over on defense. And they actually, it's not just Jake Bentley, they haven't had a single turnover on offense the last three games. And they're towards the top of the conference in turnovers forced on defense.
You can follow him on Twitter at Wes Mitchell GC. Well, Chris Lammons decided to sound off this week saying Georgia can't pass. Florida tried that a week ago, and granted, Georgia didn't really have to pass. Do you like the fact that you have a guy putting a bullseye on his back?
No, and I was standing there when he said it, and it was almost kind of just a like an offhand comment. Like it wasn't like something that was delivered with force or anything. Like you watch the video, it wasn't like he was coming out saying, you know, Georgia cannot pass the football. It was almost sort of a comment that was made in passing, and as soon as he said it, I was like, well, that quote's going to end up on a bulletin board somewhere. So, you certainly – every team wants to have confidence, but certainly seeing the way it played out for Florida last week, I doubt that Will Muschamp was too happy when he saw that quote come across Twitter and Facebook and all the different websites.
You see, Wes Mitchell has taken us right to the heart of the matter here, right to the – origin, the genesis of bulletin board material. That's why we're having him on from Gamecock Central. Wes Mitchell here on the WadeFord.com hotline, counting down here to the Dogs and the Gamecocks on Saturday. So we talked a little bit about Deebo Samuel, and I know that at least reportedly the door has been left open that he might return sometime this year. Is that realistic? Do I have my facts together? If he returns, would it not be until the bowl game, right, around Christmas or whenever? What's up with Deebo Samuel and that injury?
Yeah, I think he can get back this year. I mean, it's not going to be this week. You know, he's not showing up in Athens in a, you know, dressed out in a uniform. But I think with the way his rehab has gone, and they've been very, very quiet about it. You see Deebo even sort of making little hints on social media about how well the rehab is going and how he's hoping to get back soon and stuff like that. Originally, it was sort of listed as a out for the season. Then Deebo and his mother actually tweeted that it could be more like 5 to 6 weeks, which I think actually would have been last week, would have been the first sort of, I think that was 5 or 6 weeks from the injury. So, from what I've heard, it's a real possibility. It's still a matter of just making sure he's 100% and not even, 95% with something like that. But the kid's walking around now. He's not in a boot or anything. He's not rolling around on those little things that you have to keep your foot elevated on. So the progress has been very, very good. I think the kid's back before the bowl game, but nobody around here is going to officially sort of tell you that or report that at this time.
Wes, we got about a minute left. What does South Carolina have to do to pull the upset this weekend against Georgia?
Well, I think, you know, I talked about turnovers a second ago. I think, A, they got to win the turnover battle. When they have been tough to beat, they've turned teams over, and then they've taken advantage and scored off of those turnovers. This is a team offensively that has moved the ball but has struggled at times in the red zone. They've settled for a lot of field goals. So when they're really good, they force field goals, they score touchdowns, they win the turnover battle. And then on top of all that, I think you need Georgia to have that just sort of classic letdown game that every team has every year. I think every team, even national title teams, have a game or two where they just have a letdown, they don't play as well, and they have to find a way to win. I think for South Carolina, they're going to need a little bit of luck. They're going to need Georgia to probably play their worst game and the Gamecocks to play their best game. South Carolina is going to be outmatched across the board at a lot of spots. But as we've seen from this this matchup over the years, it generally finds a way to be fairly close.
Wes, that was a whole bunch of reality there at the end of this interview. And dog fans were like, no, earmuffs, earmuffs. But Wes, great stuff, man. Really appreciate the time. And enjoy the ball game this weekend.
All right, thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Oh, that's a lot of fun talking some Gamecock football with Wes Mitchell from Gamecock Central. Follow him again on Twitter at Wes Mitchell GC. Let's get back to the conversation we were just having during the college football cheat sheet. Did the committee get the top 25 right in the first college football playoff ranking? We get to that next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com.
John had the latest news from college football and want to hear from you. 404-741-0929. This is the College Football Cheat Sheet on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
All right, welcome back to the Kia Studios. Your boys Rick and John here in the middle of our college football hour. And it's the College Football Cheat Sheet brought to you by R.S. Andrews. Keep cool. Get an R.S. Andrews Precision AC Tune-Up. Another way they make you smile at rsandrews.com. Let's get back on the phone call train here. 404-741-0929. We love talking with y'all about college football. And our college football cheat sheet now features an interactive question of the day. Very simply, did the committee get it right? For the most part, John, and I think they did.
I do. I mean, I wouldn't have ranked it that way. My opinion, and I think Rick's opinion as well, is different.
What do you mean, like Hurricanes number one?
No, I would not have had Miami number one. I would rank the undefeateds as the top four and then follow in from there, which is why we put our own poll up at 92.9thegame.com. Speaking of polls, we've got a Vision Computers Twitter poll up right now at Rick and John 929.
You'll give us a follow on Twitter at Rick and John 929. Did the College Football Playoff Committee get it right? Pretty easy. Yes, no, or... It's too early to care. Yes, no, or too early to care. And right now, 50-50 between yes and too early.
Yeah, I'm in a way. I don't say it's too early to care because we're in the last month. I mean, we've only got 4 weeks of college football left.
We only have 2 weeks left of the regular season in your fantasy league.
That's it?
I think.
That's probably
you tell me, you're the commissioner.
It doesn't show the schedule, so I really don't know. I'd have to go on the actual website. I just use the phone thingamajiggy and leave it at that.
Yeah, the app's pretty solid.
It's okay.
Is it getting the job done? Is it affording us a platform to play college football fantasy?
And is it something you'll do again next year?
What?
I love it.
I'm in a 30-team basketball league that I covet and love. My big money football league that I've been in over 20 years. Mm-hmm. Number three right now, with a bullet, is your college football fantasy league. I'm obsessed by this league.
Yeah, unfortunately, the league that I run, I've had a little payment issue, meaning most people haven't paid. So the league may be free, and I may be shutting that league down at the end of this year.
Your league.
Yeah, I'm tired
of
running
after... Your cockamamie league with the weird scoring
and everything. The scoring's awesome, and I'm tired of running after grown blank men who don't want to pay fantasy
Have you not heard my promos for LeagueSafe.com?
I did.
Okay.
I did. But see, these were a trustworthy group, and now they've just all gone radio silent. I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. I've got another league. I'm in with my buddies at Carriage Kia, and I'm in the playoffs right now as we speak. So I'm good. I'm feeling good with everything.
What do you mean you're in the playoffs? Oh, you mean if the playoffs started today, you'd be in?
Yeah, it's a 16-team league. Eight make the playoffs. I'm in third place. I'm a game or two out of first. So I'm pretty set to be locked in, barring just an unbelievably bad spell.
Let me ask you a question about Miami here, and we'll take some calls. Did the committee get it right? We have not gotten the John Michaels fully endorsed Miami opinion. We've been talking about the dogs and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. Miami is undefeated.
Yep.
And they're 10th. There are nine teams ahead of Miami, and what is it, the math? Six of those teams have lost a game.
Yeah.
Are you okay with that?
Yeah, I'm fine. I fully anticipated. I thought they'd be ninth, to be honest. I thought they'd be ahead of Wisconsin, but everything's in front of them. You win this week, you go to the ACC championship game. You beat Notre Dame, you're going to be in the top four. So I'm not really worried about it. It's, you know, if they had already played Virginia Tech and Notre Dame and they were at 10, I'd be livid. They've got everything in front of them. Go play better football this week offensively. Matter of fact, co-offensive coordinator Thomas Brown went off in the Miami paper, calling it embarrassing what they did at North Carolina. He said everybody that had a Miami jersey or shirt on should be embarrassed for what they put out, and he vowed to make it better. Whatever. Coach speak, but it's nice to hear that fire coming from down there.
Let me ask you a quick question here, and Miami related. In terms of Travis Homer taking over for Mark Walton, his numbers have gone down each week. Yeah. He had a crucial fumble that almost blew the game in the season for Miami at the end of that game. Do you anticipate Rick continuing with Homer as the bell cow back, or do you think that, you know, he'll kind of go to the bullpen for another guy or two, at least to balance it out a little bit?
He doesn't really have another guy. That's the issue. It's Homer. You got a kid named Trayon Gray who has gotten about four carries in 2 weeks. And they've got a young kid out of somewhere in, I think, Brunswick, Georgia, named DJ Dallas, who had about a 40-yard reception the other day. I think you'll see DJ get in there a little bit more. It's only about his third week at running back. He was playing receiver before then. But Homer's injury, or Homer being there, he's your guy. He's going to get 20 carries a week. And that's why they've been going a lot of five wide receiver as well. Let's go to Jason in Peachtree City. Did the committee get it right, Jason?
I think they did a good job, man, but I also think that there was a misfire. I feel like there's just this feeling about Alabama that until proven otherwise, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like Georgia might be, you know, they're probably at number two. So it's close, and this is a very for-the-time-being type of ranking. I do think Alabama does have a signature win to some extent at College Station. I don't think Georgia wins that game, so I think it's close, but I would say Alabama at one.
You don't think
they win at College Station?
Why couldn't Georgia go to Texas A&M and beat a 7'4" quarterback named Coley, whatever the hell his name is?
Kellen Mond?
They got a new guy now.
Oh, they got a different guy?
I'm tripping. I'm confusing Arkansas and Texas A&M right now. But the reason I'm getting it confused is because I disagree with that take. He just completely dismissed any chance at all of UGA going into College Station and beating the Aggies.
Yeah, never mind.
Love you, bro. Thank you for the call, but give me a break.
Never mind that they have a win over the number three team in the country at their home stadium. Let's go to Danny in Flowery Branch. Did the committee get it right, Danny?
I don't think they did, and I'll tell you why. It's because they say that these are the only polls that matter, but yet they're using the rankings from the AP poll to determine who gets put in what position, saying that Georgia beat Mississippi State and they beat Notre Dame, and where they were ranked in the AP polls at the time.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the preseason polls need to disappear. Gone. We don't need a college football poll until this week. You want to have a magazine, Phil Steele put his preseason poll out, that's fine. It does give a preconceived notion, because you still talk about, well, Clemson beat three AP top 15 teams at the beginning of the year. That's great. Not knocking Clemson. Clemson's a great football team, and they probably will be in the playoff. Beating top 15s that are no longer ranked, where does that really matter today? Alabama, and Bill Hancock told us, would get credit for beating number three Florida State. Why are they getting credit for a poll that we don't even use?
John, super quick on the confusion with the quarterback scenario there. Cole Kelly is the guy that I'm confusing for Arkansas, because Austin Allen is hurt. And for Texas A&M, last week, I did not watch Mississippi State, Texas A&M, but based on the box score, it looks like Kellen Mond got benched. 8 of 26 passing with two interceptions, and they got Nick Starkle into the game, and he actually had a .133 on 8 completions and a touchdown. So they have a murky quarterback scenario there at Texas A&M.
Arkansas quarterback, you said Cole Kelly?
Cole Kelly.
I suggest as early research material, you look up Kelly Kelly. Go look at Kelly Kelly.
Kelly Kelly?
Trust me, you'll like her a heck of a lot better than Cole Kelly. Let's go to Bobby in Southwest Atlanta. Bobby, did the committee get it right?
Yeah, pretty much for the most part. I mean, this thing is subjective anyway. You know what I mean? Anything you decide to use to help you gauge where a team is at is subjective. I hear you talking about Wisconsin and University of Miami, and I understand your feelings toward Miami. But if I was going to sit there and tell you the eye test, would you anybody look at those two teams and say they're a top five team right now?
Probably not.
Probably? No, they're not. You know what I mean? But the good thing about this is if they take care of their business, they can work their way into it. And that's what's great about this, because we got four more weeks where every week it's an elimination round. You know what I mean? If you're going to go by the eye test, sure, Georgia's up there. Sure, Alabama's up there. Clemson. Penn State until this last loss. You know, they don't get to play anybody else, so it kind of hurts them. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma's a good team. There are a bunch of good teams out there. Virginia Tech takes care of their business they're in. You know what I mean? But the reality is this. It's a starting point. And if you use polls to kind of gauge for that, I'm not going to be mad at you.
See, I am, because they tell you that the polls don't matter.
But why, if you don't have a preseason poll, and I understand your frustration mm-hmm. with it because it's a lot of guessing involved, then what do you do? How do you got to have a number next to the team's names for the TV and the selling the games and all that.
I don't think you do. You sell Alabama against Georgia or Alabama against Florida, people tune in for Alabama.
I'm going to take a look here during the break how wrong they were with the preseason ranking. I want to take a look at that.
Take a break. We come back. This guy's always right. He's the analyst on the Falcons Radio Network, and his Iowa State Cyclones are on fire. Arch joins us next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.